And welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Here we are. Choose or lose. We are, like, this is three episodes from the end. It feels in many ways like a penultimate episode. Like, technically it's not, but I do feel it has that kind of like deep breath before we plunge into the ending type of feel.
I would agree with that. And I mean, they do that weird thing where the next episode is kind of wrapping up this part of the mystery. And then we have another time jump in the final episode. Do we have like two time jumps in the final episode? I think we might.
Who knows?
We'll
have to wait and see. But yeah, like, you know, gosh, the first time jump was so successful. Why not do another one?
Exactly. Yeah.
The big idea of this episode is that the liars need to choose one of them to take the fall or they'll all go down. It features the exposure of A is for Aria, the dud of a Halo wedding, the return of Tanner, and Emerson having their dark forest candle sex. Also, trigger warning for Alex Drake seducing Toby with no informed consent.
Yeah, we're getting some more Alex Drake sightings here. I think that there are some ideas in this episode that I think are interesting. The whole concept of like choose or lose is a good one. I think it is just rushed. And I sort of wish that we had gotten to see a version of this play out over this whole half season.
Yes. And the thing about the choose or lose, it is rushed. And the liars refuse to make a choice. Like, this would be super interesting if the liars actually were, like, you know, if the show was willing to pull the trigger on choose or lose, but it's not, so.
No, and it's literally, like, there's scenes of just them just watching the clock tick down, and it kind of, it's, like, this weird experience as the viewer of, like, it kind of feels like the show, the characters are literally running the clock, and it feels like the show is doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, this is a really strange episode to watch with the knowledge that we have of how everything is going to conclude, I feel like.
I agree.
We'll get more into that. Like, there's a particular part where I'm like, oh, this is, like, not great what you're doing to the viewer here. But yeah, we'll see. There are some things that I feel like this episode does pretty successfully, and then there are a lot of things that I think it doesn't. Do we want to jump in?
Let's do it. Let's dive right in. Okay.
We open on Emerson having tea and morning kisses. We get talk about Allie having tossed and turned all night. But Emily's like, you know, Emily's got some game. Oh, you know, you're so beautiful in the morning. Just because you had a bad night doesn't mean they can't have a, like, suggestive eyebrow waggle from Shay. A good morning. And then they're smooching and unzipping clothes and heading for the bedroom. But it is a big, queer, sexy times killer when the Liars Lament board game has been moved onto Allison's bed. They stare at it. Emily is worried that someone might be in the house. And at that moment, there's a knock at the door. Emily goes to answer it, and egads, it is the cops. They have a search warrant. Emily gets on the phone with Hannah, and we learn that her place is also being searched. We have kind of this, like, you know, jumping from, like, scene to scene, simultaneous search warrants situation. Hannah heard from Spencer. They notified Aria, etc. At Allison's, the detectives are heading to the bedroom. And Allison is panicked about them finding the game. I don't know what she thinks the police, like, would arrest her for having a board game. I don't know. until they reach the bedroom and the game is gone. Poof, it has disappeared. Cut to Aria hurriedly shredding that police report that she never filed, which is like such a bad way to get rid of it if a search warrant is forthcoming. Like, they can and will search the trash, like, and you're shredding something, it's only going to draw attention to it. Like, tear that up and flush it. Like, oh, Arya. Yeah. The detectives want to take Hannah's phone, cut to Spencer stomping into the police station, demanding to speak with Detective Fury. Uh-oh, Detective Fury can't come to the phone anymore. Why not? Because he's dead. LOL, no, really. It's just that he is not handling the case anymore. Tanner is. She is here to eat scenery and to try to arrest some liars, and sucks for them. The show doesn't have the budget for scenery anymore. I thought this was one of the better opening sequences.
Yeah.
It does build suspense. It has like a pretty good pace of cutting back and forth. It builds the energy. And I feel like there even is the mini reveal of the game going missing, followed by the big reveal of Tanner's return. It sets the stakes up high after weeks of nebulous talk about the police closing in. So I feel like the opening is good stuff. Might also be kind of a situation where the episode peaks early.
Yeah, I think this is a strong opening. I think it builds good momentum. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, Marco's just gone, right? We don't see him again?
You know, I meant to check on that and then I didn't care enough. But I think it's very possible.
Well, I like this pattern because we saw it with Holbrook too, of like Tanner coming in to like sweep up the mess of these like horny, you know, corrupt detectives underneath her. And I, you know, a squad raid is always a fun time. LOL at Arya, not only shredding the file right then, like she's had it for at least like a night, but like now is the time to do it. And I love the way that like she kind of presents it to Prezzer. He's like, what are you doing? And it's like, there's no time. Like,
put it in the garbage disposal, like, yeah. Submerge it in water so that the ink runs. Like, yeah, I, this is like such a hilariously bad move.
It is. Well, and I mean, obviously later Prezzer will be able to piece it together. A funny thing is that when Kelsey and I are wearing lipstick that we don't want to have smudge, we've started saying we're going to have like an Emerson style kiss. And the alternative to that is a CW kiss, but an Emerson kiss where it's just like hands clasped in front of each other, just the bare expression of lips.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk. We'll definitely talk more about their level of intimacy later on. But yeah, that is an excellent way to describe it. I feel like almost all of their kisses, their bodies are positioned in such a way that they're still leaving room for the Lord.
Oh yeah, and even the way that Allison is unzipping Emily's sweatshirt, it's almost as if she's like, I don't really want to do this.
I think that the show feels or is trying to do something where like the way that Emerson undresses is supposed to be very playful, which is weird because in this very episode, we get like a lot of like straight couples who are like explicitly taking off someone's bra or like ripping each other's shirts off. Sure. But here with Emerson, it's like, ooh, unzipping a hoodie. Ooh.
Exactly. So scandalous.
And like, also, I feel like another like hallmark of this period of Emerson, and don't get me wrong, I'm really glad Emerson is together.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad they're going to get like, a scene later on where everybody is having sex, but I also feel like a hallmark of them during this period is that Emerson is constantly wearing so many clothes.
Yes!
So that when they have scenes where like they're starting to get undressed, they'll still constantly be like, no matter how many layers they peel off, they'll still be like several more layers that they're still wearing, plus like, you know, I don't know what that situation is later, some kind of a burlap rug or blanket or something that they have like brought with them to the forest that they can then be underneath. So yeah, it's a choice.
I also like that this starts on the couch. We know that the De Laurentiis house is enormous, but it's like So we have to like walk to our bed, and we can't take off any clothes between here and the bed. Like they couldn't be like tearing each other's clothes off. It has to be this like delicate little like, ooh, I'm zipping the hoodie.
Well, I have many, many thoughts about whatever is happening with them. But one thought that I have is they live in this house. Like they don't live with anyone else. They're not like in the loft or anything. Like there's actually no reason that they couldn't just have sex on the couch where they were when this started.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's not proper. That's not proper to have couch sex.
Okay. Yes. We need to go to the dark forest with our candles, of course.
Exactly. So Spencer gets the shush. After the credits, Tanner is explaining to Spencer that Marco was a good cop who got distracted here in Rosewood. Spencer can't say if she agrees, but Tanner presses, saying that Marco told her all about their relationship before taking himself off the case. Tanner invites Spencer to tell her the truth, noting how well Spencer played him. And there's an interesting line that Spencer has about, that Tanner has, I guess, about fairness is overrated, because Spencer's saying that the situation is not fair. Tanner notes that she is a closer and she will get to the bottom of this murder. She has always felt that the liars are guilty in some way. I like Tanner having the last word, but also, like, she is clearly so prejudiced against them. Like, I feel like they should be able to go to somebody and be like, this cop clearly has it out for us. She has stated as such.
Well, yes. And I really feel that, like, yes, this is all something. I laughed out loud when Tanner says, by the way, I'm a closer. I say, like, yeah, tell that to the still open cases of Jessica and Charlotte DeLaurentis, Detective Tanner. Like, I don't know. I'm like a closer of what? Like doors? Not cases.
No, not cases.
Okay. So Prezra wants to speak to the manager of this police search. He's like, do you not understand that I am a straight, rich, white man? He bustles off to the police station, promising Aria that he will get to the bottom of this. As he is leaving, a policewoman kind of very, like, you know, very, like, slapstick comedy, like, plucks Aria's cell phone right from her hands. Mm-hmm. The moment Prezra and the police are gone, a phone rings. Takes Aria a moment to find it. Very Veronica Mars, it is concealed in an air vent. When she does, there is a missed call from AD. She calls back, and AD says they know that the cops took her phone. They don't want her to be without, especially now that Aria is on their team. Aria says that's not good enough. She wants to meet. She's earned it, and time is running out. AD eventually agrees to a meeting tonight. They'll text the details, and Aria, they say, wear the uniform.
It's a little sexual, the way that Aria is instructed to do this.
More than a little, I feel.
Yeah. 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 This is a very dark joke, but it would have been amazing if, like, the Rosewood PD, like, turned to Prezra and was like, here's your child pornography back, sir. Like, bothering you. We just got to finish the raid on your girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh, we weren't looking for this.
Like, yeah. You're fine.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I do like Aria having this sort of tête-à-tête with AD here.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Especially, like, I feel like there is a, like, before when we saw Aria interacting with other characters, and, like, particularly in the first part of the season where Aria was, like, the only mobile one who was, like, going around and, like, visiting everybody and talking to all the other liars, in this episode, she is so isolated. Her main communication is with AD, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And we get this shot then of Mona in her apartment in the hoodie, taking off a headset in a way that is definitely meant to make us consider whether this was Mona on the phone.
Yeah, unclear if she made the call or if she was just listening in, but, like, it's like, ooh. There's a connection.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's a classic, you know, Moan is being shady moment.
Yep.
Do you want me to take this next scene since that was so short?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It did have the Vander Jesus, but it was very short. So, yes.
It was very short.
You get to take the next scene where I'm sure all the employees of the Radley are like, they had a protocol.
They just have their walkie-talkies out. They're like, everybody. It's like that scene in The Devil Wears Prada when like Miranda Priestly shows up at the office and Stanley Tucci's like, okay, everybody, gird your loins. Like, it's like that. So Hannah arrives at the Radley and is quickly confronted by a very concerned Ashley, who demands the truth about Hannah's involvement with Archer. And as we talked about last week, poor Ashley has had to deal with this whole, you know, like flooding situation. Hannah at first puts up a front about Ashley thinking that she needs help before admitting that she does. They embrace, and Hannah says that she is not letting Ashley get involved. She loves her too much. I like this moment a lot. I really like Hannah owning up to the fact that she is in trouble, but kind of saying like, hey, you've stepped in for me so many times, and this time I'm going to try to figure this out without your help.
I really like this scene too. Like, especially when she says Ashley has done enough things to try and protect her. You know, I'm thinking about the grand larceny that she committed. I'm thinking about like the Wilden stuff. Yeah. Like,
sure.
So I feel like this is nice. This is like, you know, Ashley's large adult criminal daughter is all grown up.
Yes. Yeah. Baby's first murder cover up. Mm-hmm. Actually not her first.
Yeah. Exactly.
There have been a few.
So next thing we know, Hannah is entering the suite that Ashley has apparently donated to the Liars until they're allowed back into their houses, and Spencer is distributing burner phones. Has anyone heard from Aria, who is the only one who's not present there? Spencer says no, because she doesn't have a burner phone yet. Caleb talks some computer talk about finding the game via cell towers. Emily mentions AD watching her and Allison sleep, which is apparently outing their relationship to the other Liars, I guess. Hannah smiles and kind of says, about time. And Spencer kind of looks like vaguely pleased / turned on. Hannah wants some food, but the room service cart has a salad with the phone from the game on it. Yes. Everyone gathers around and the text says, choose or lose. One plea or they all go down. A clock starts with 36 hours listed. It seems the game wants them to pick one of them to go to jail. Out of nowhere, the Vander Jesus appears in a very queer boarding school outfit. Tweed, a scarf, leather accents. She thinks they should ask Aria about this. Why? Because she believes that Aria is playing for the AD team.
I feel like this is like a drop the D, it's cleaner situation. Like, AD team does not have the same ring as the A team. But Mona does have a little bit of like slightly more nervous Mona energy here. I felt like the reaction to Emerson was a bit anticlimactic. What did you
think? Very, very underwhelming. Also, it's just like, this is like, this is like, it should be big news. Like, they've been kind of doing this will they or won't they since everybody was in high school. It's like, I would really want their friends to be at least as excited as like I am about Emerson. And Hannah is like happy, I guess, but also just like, you know, it just still has the like, you know, don't really care kind of element to it. And like, how did Emily, like, not tell everybody immediately? Like, this is, like, it just feels like it should be much bigger news.
And it's one of those moments where, like, it makes it feel like these are people who don't really know each other.
Yeah, which, like, they're coworkers or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess they're coworkers in the game of A, in a sense. But, yeah, it's that way in which, like, the friendships have just felt a lot more fractured lately.
Well, especially, like, you know, Mona knew about Emerson. Like when she was, you know, when she was overhearing that phone conversation. So I guess Mona's just the one who's paying attention.
Well, Mona, also her radar goes up for queer stuff. We know that.
That is very true.
Speaking of which, after the break, Spencer is telling Mona to explain. And there is a great moment where Spencer or where Mona plops right down on the couch between Allie and Hannah, forcing Emily off to a chair by herself. She says that first there was the locker situation where Aria wasn't where she said she was that night. And Mona asks Spencer who was near her house when the Mary Drake recording was played. Spencer has to admit that Aria was, and Mona saw her get a puzzle piece at the Brew. She says that she has proof and plays the phone call snippet from earlier. Spencer wants more concrete proof. Is this how that happened? Mona says, just remember you asked for it. And is that when she plays the clip?
At any rate, Spencer is like, wanting more evidence. And Mona's like, well, look out, gonna get it.
Yeah, here it is. And we see that the countdown is continuing.
Yes. Tanner is on the phone saying that they should be able to file charges within the week. A tech of some type comes out and hands her an evidence bag of broken glass. There's blood in there too, he says. Found it in the shower drain. Tanner smiles, takes a bite of scenery, and tells him good work.
I feel like there's a lot of forensic stuff in this episode that I'm like, I'm no scientist, but I don't think this is how forensics works.
I am no scientist either. I am like the partner of a mystery writer. We do watch a lot of true crime. And one thing that I will tell you is that, like, there is absolutely no way that that has already been processed by any kind of a crime lab in between. Yeah. Like, they just brought it out of Spencer's house. The only way they know that there's blood on there is if they put that glass in the shower, which I'm also not above suspecting them of. So,
yeah,
FYI.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a good twist for Tanner, that she was like planting
to plant evidence for them. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, exactly. Or that maybe Mona like frames her for doing that or something to get her off the liar's back. Like, that would be kind of an interesting.
Oh my gosh. That would be amazing. If Mona put some like bloody glass in there, but it didn't match the glass from Lucas's windshield or something, so that it's definitely going to seem like the police were up to no good. Yeah, that would be a great counter move.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very making a murderer, I think.
Yeah, very, very making a murderer. Very, like, serious affair styles. Yeah.
For sure. So at the Radley, Spencer is met by Lumberjack Toby, who has grown himself a grief beard. He has also been called in for more questioning from Tanner. He says that he is hanging in there. She says that there is just so much noise coming from everywhere, and he invites her to come to the cabin where it's quieter. He thinks that the police are building a solid case. Spencer asks if she should be worried. Then when he inquires if she actually was involved in Dunhill's murder, she does not answer. She has to go and tells him that it's better if he doesn't know where.
I like this scene between the two of them, actually. I like that, they obviously have, like, a lot of history between them, but they are each kind of acting like Toby might be wearing a wire.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, there's kind of this weird vibe here of, like, is Toby still, like, kind of a cop or not?
Unknown.
Yeah. Is he like a volunteer police officer on weekends?
I think he's mostly werewolf now based on the beard. But like in terms of what he does to support himself, that remains unknown.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
He just werewolves around and fishes from the lake or not fishes from the lake.
So. Yeah, yeah, he definitely fishes or not fishes. Yeah.
So Aria is hurriedly shoving stuff in a backpack and wearing all black and just looking shady as fuck. Like, you know, that, like, Aria just went to her closet and was like, what is my shadiest outfit? Here we go. She is like getting all this together. Prezra comes in and is like, what is going on? Why do you look more sus than me all of a sudden? Are you trying to emasculate my susness? Fortunately, Aria distracts him by getting him to answer his cell phone and then disappears into the night. I really love, I feel like throughout this, like, Aria working for A situation, We have seen the way that her relationship with Prezra, like the frequent beats of it are like, oh, she has to go. She can't help the liars because there's some Prezra drama going on. There's some Prezra thing. And we've seen how A is able to exploit that, and her weird behavior doesn't even seem weird because her bad relationship is always like this. And I feel like this is another one of those beats, like Prezra constantly being distracted by like, oh, there's this busy, important man thing I have to do. He does that. And then Arya is suddenly like not waiting right there for him. Suddenly she is like vanished into the night. And I love that there's like, there's a little bit of Mona, I feel, in Arya's escape here.
I was just thinking that as you were saying that, I was just thinking that it is very Mona. And I don't know, I like that there's, I feel like there is a read of this episode that like Mona and Arya are working together in some respect or having an affair in some respect, or like there's some connection going on between them.
Love it. Love it.
So at an abandoned playground, Arya is waiting in the dark in her hoodie. She gets a text that I'm sure is from Mona that says she does look good in uniform. Then she hears a twig snapping and follows the noise to the other liars. Bum, bum, bum.
And like, there's also this like, you know, in Drag Race, it would be like a wig snatching moment. But there's like this moment where like, I think it's Hannah like rips off the hoodie to expose that it is Arya.
Well, and I'll kind of repeat my comment of when they snuck up on Lucas. It's like, it's hard to be this large of a group and be like, a secret, you know?
Well, I feel like the way that this is set up is almost like Arya is like running to like apparently meet AD, she thinks. And she just kind of like runs into the semicircle of liars, like amazing. So great. The liars just swirl accusations around Arya. Mona was right. Did Arya trash the nursery? How could she? Did she plant that recording? Has she been working with AD? Arya tries to explain about the unfiled police report and how Prezra could have gone to jail. And Allison, who I love so much in this moment, says, "So what?"
Yes!
Was it just a no-brainer for her to pick him over her friends? Arya says she didn't know what to do, and Emily says she could have talked to them. They've been friends since forever. That is what they do. Arya mentions about how A always makes them make bad choices and brings up Malcolm, who Spencer kidnapped, etc. Spencer says she didn't end up hurting anyone. The Hastings are now getting a divorce because of Arya. This puts a lot of blame on the dropper of the burner phone with the murder confession on it, but whatever. Spencer is furious. She says Arya took everything she ever had. She's done. She's out. Spencer tries to storm off, but Allie, just got a call from Tanner. She wants all of them down at the station, including Arya. Spencer looks at her in disgust and tells her to find her own ride. Arya stands alone as the other liars stalk away, not speaking to her betraying Judas Iscariot ass.
Yeah, I think this is a good scene with a couple of like odd moments to it. I think that it's interesting to me that they like very quickly get Allison out of the scene.
Yes.
you know,
an odd choice, but yeah.
Yeah, but also like kind of fitting of the way they've treated Allison ever since she came back. Like, well, you're just sort of the fifth liar out there.
We're lucky she's back. We're lucky she didn't just like, Allison got a call. She had to go out of town again.
Yeah, she's back in New York for some reason. Love Arya bringing up Malcolm. Like, what an old but low blow for her to go for. Also, though, like, maybe not the strongest comparison since Spencer was, like, a mentally, you know, disturbed teenager at the time.
I agree. But I will also say, you know, this is similar to when they brought up Lucas destroying Allison's shrine, as if, and I said, true, like, Allison is not even dead anymore. I think he gets, like, I think he kind of gets a mulligan on that at this point. Malcolm isn't even Presra's son anymore. Yeah. So
yes. Malcolm's a fake son.
Again?
Yeah.
Again, I think that is kind of an extenuating story. I mean, I guess, does that make it better or worse? Spencer kidnapped a random kid.
Yeah, that is a real, like, which one is here?
Yeah, I guess maybe that. But yeah, I find it, like, really funny that, like, the writers are just digging through the archives here.
I also find it funny that Spencer is so fixated on her parents' divorce. You know, because it's also not like, the Hastings were, like, this happily married couple and this bomb dropped out of nowhere. Like, they've been on the brink of divorce how many times? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I totally get Spencer being mad about the Arya betrayal, but it's funny to me that they chose to write it as, like, well, we need her to be mad about something concrete. She has to be really pissed about this divorce.
Yeah, well, I do, though, think that it is somewhat consistent that Spencer does not want her parents to get divorced, like, for whatever reason. And also, like, I think that in the normal run of things, in the event of a Hastings divorce, Spencer would have stayed with her mom. Like, we saw that last time.
Sure.
Last time we thought they were going to divorce, like, Veronica was like, okay, I'm taking Spencer and we're out of here. But I think, like, Spencer really has, like, a lot of uncertainty about that now because she's found out that Veronica isn't her biological mother, and there's I feel like you're right, the writers did it just so that Spencer could be in, like, a heightened emotional state about this, but I do think that, like, it is not totally inconsistent with, like, Spencer's character journey that she would be like having a lot of feelings about her parents splitting up and about Arya being, like, a betrayer at the time.
I think that's fair. That's fair. So in, weirdly, the mugshot room, odd place for this scene to take place. I think, you know, like, is this where interrogations take place? Are we out of sets? Like, what's going on here? Were they just, like, on a photo shoot for the season and they were like, well, we might as well shoot a scene here?
I already told you what happened. Tanner ate the sets of the rest of the station already.
My mistake. Tanner ate all the sets. And so this is, all we have left is the mugshot room. Which I'm sure has a more technical term than the mugshot room. But Spencer has all the liars sitting in a line. And she tells them that the glass they have found is a match for the windshield that was found under Archer's nails. Which, I'm sorry, is this a thing? I don't know that it is.
Well, also, she says fingernails. And I was like, you only have one finger. How many nails does it have?
Good point. Good way. Like, there's a lot that feels wrong in what she's saying here.
Well, also, police are allowed to lie. Like, police in America are allowed to, like, lie to suspects. So I don't think we should consider anything that the police are saying in general or that Tanner is saying here to necessarily be 100% true.
Very good point. Very good point. She says that they are analyzing all of their search history, which to me is, like, a funny, like, what is she going to find? Emily asks what else the police have, which I really like the way Emily asks that. Like, she's just kind of at the end of her rope here. Tanner says Radley Hotel video, including the elevator. Spencer asks why she's telling them this. I ask, why don't they all have lawyers? Tanner is giving them the chance to tell their side of the story. Spencer tries to appeal to Tanner's heart, saying that Tanner is the one who rescued them. But Tanner turns that around, saying that she only had to rescue them because they wouldn't tell the truth. Wow, way to blame the victim, Tanner. Spencer asks if they're done, and Tanner, who I guess has no more reason to be able to hold them, reluctantly sends them home.
So I love the way that, like, the liars are all there. Arya is not. She's the last one in.
Yeah.
No one looks at her. No one speaks to her. And then when they're done, the liars file out and no one even, like, acknowledges Arya's existence. Like, she's just, like, they're cutting her dead, basically.
I like that they're doing that, but they're not somehow, like, Arya did it. You know, like, they're not, like, throwing her the bus with Tanner. Like, they're still, the code still exists.
Yeah, and they're not, like, they're not, fighting openly in front of Tanner, but it's like, right. Arya can be in no doubt of where she stands here. She is, for like, sure, a non-person.
Well, also the way that they're icing her out is so Allie Mean Girl.
Yeah, absolutely is. I feel like the way that Tanner is like, we're getting a video from the Radley Hotel, including the elevator footage. Well, what is the elevator footage going to show you? Spencer making out in a drunken way with a detective? Like, what bearing does that possibly have?
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like that's the way this show often works, where it's like, well, you know, your parent is like a maniac, so you're obviously a maniac, and like biology is destiny. Here it's like, being a sloppy drunk in an elevator definitely means that you killed someone earlier in the night. Like that's the level of proof that Tanner seems to be operating on here.
Yeah, it's strange.
So Ari is driving her car when the AD line rings. She answers it furious. AD set her up. They were never going to meet her. They just wanted her to turn against the liars, then blow her cover and blow up everyone's lives. Well, congrats. It worked. Oh, she's so mad. And Arya says, now the cops are on her ass and she's got nothing from AD. And AD is like, hello, I gave you that file. The file is over. And Arya's like, we're done. She tries to hang up, but hilariously, I love AD's magical phone powers in this episode.
Me too.
In this scene, Arya like cannot hang up the phone. She cannot hang up on AD. How frustrating. She makes like she's gonna fling the phone out the window. And I really wish that the phone were like a boomerang, like Arya would throw it out and then it would just like come back and be in the car again. But no, she goes to fling the phone out the window. AD cautions her not to. Why not? Arya demands. Because tomorrow is another day, AD tells her. What happens tomorrow? Arya asks. AD says, wait for it.
I love this. I love, like, there's something about AD saying tomorrow is another day. Like, it's like that's a phrase that people will often use as a way of comforting somebody. And I sort of like this idea that, like, AD is now the only person that Arya is talking to and is in this weird way, like, this sort of reflection of Arya's self and also sort of the only person who knows Arya intimately in this weird way. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
So at the brew, Hannah is staring at the phone and remarks that time is stupid. They question how it is that they are all about to go to jail. Also, I would love if they all confessed to the crime, kind of, this is a Grey's Anatomy reference, but LVAD wire style from season 2. Emily notes that, well, they did kill a guy, you may have heard. And Hannah wonders if anyone noticed anything different about Mona. I do love that she has picked up on something. But before they can dwell on that, they get a 24 hours left to go message. Emily says that there is no way that they'll choose. And then the liars do a round robin, each saying why it should be them. Hannah, then Spencer, then Allie. Emily points out that this is what AD wants, that he already did it with Arya, and that he would have found a way to do it with all of the rest of them. She mentions that AD did do this first with Spencer, who seems to take that to heart. They've got some thinking to do.
Yes. I thought they were at the Radley Bar. I don't know where they are. I felt like they wouldn't be at the brew just because that's like sort of Arya territory.
Arya, maybe they were at the Radley
Bar. They're somewhere. They're somewhere having drinks and conversation about who should turn themselves in for the murder.
I will say, I like that Spencer, this is a more thoughtful Spencer, I feel, that we are seeing in this episode. And I definitely think you can see Spencer's growth in this episode.
I agree. So Caleb is computering. Ashley walks up and wants him to tell her what's going on with Hannah. Is she covering for Allison? Did she have something to do with Dunhill's death? Close body watch here between Caleb and Ashley again. Caleb crosses his arms, and then we are to assume, based on what happens later in the episode, he spills all the beans.
It's bad. This is not, like, I'm very mad at Caleb for this. This is not his story to spill.
Oh, 100% agreement. Like, so, this is, like, he's demonstrating that, you know, he decides that he knows what she needs better than she does. He's demonstrating a lack of trust in her ability to run her own life and an unwillingness to abide by her wishes or to communicate and compromise when they disagree. Like, yeah, I mean, like, this is a major am I the asshole letter. And the answer is yes, Caleb. Yes, you are.
Well, and it's again, Caleb and Ashley being Hannah's parents, which is not good. So later at the loft, Hannah is mad that Caleb told her mom, as she should be. He tells her that they're in this together. And she calls him out on using his I love you as a way to get out of this. But she relents. She accepts. She smiles. She kisses him. Ugh. Caleb's got nothing on this investigation, and Hannah muses about the oldness of various phones, which I think is quite funny, then apologizes for involving Caleb in all of this hate that she's apologizing to him here. He remarks that, but she did.
I feel like, so he has, like, spilled this whole story to Ashley. Now, I do agree that Ashley is someone who Hannah can trust 100%. But, like, mm-hmm. if Caleb is willing to, like, share the story with Ashley, who's to say that he's not going to be willing to share it with anyone else? Like, with his mom, who has money and can maybe help them afford a lawyer, or with the cops, if he feels like Hannah should take the plea deal. Like, I just really think Caleb's behavior is complete garbage.
Well, and it's also like, you know, we were kind of talking about how, like, the liars sort of talk in this episode about, like, the liar code, right? Of, like, you don't do this, you don't betray a friend. And how even with Tanner, like, they're not fighting in front of Tanner. They're not throwing Arya under the bus. And I feel like this is a moment of, like, Caleb is breaking the code.
Yeah. Oh, he 100% is. And, like, that's the rule if you're a boyfriend and they let you in. The rule is you can't discuss it with anybody outside the circle. Mm-hmm. And he is breaking it 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Spencer has come over to Prezra's, and it's so funny. Like, Arya's been living here for a while now, and I still don't say Arya's place because it's not her place.
I know. Prezra's. I don't either. Yeah.
So Spencer has come over to Prezra's. With a picture of them all from their youth. Spencer says she cannot forgive Arya, but she does realize that her point about Malcolm was valid. None of them are blameless. Arya says that she's willing to do anything to earn back Spencer's trust, but there's nothing to be done. Just as Spencer is about to leave, the police arrive, bringing back all of Arya's belongings. They have proof now that she was in New Hampshire, 300 miles away on the night that Dunhill was murdered. She was caught full face on a red light camera. Tanner looks at Spencer and says, too bad her other friends weren't so lucky. Prezra comes in and Arya tells him, we need to talk.
I love this twist. I will say, I think this is such a great twist. I think it's a really, like, it's the rare moment of, like, oh, like, we know, obviously, that A can use the Avataria technology, and the idea of A using the Avataria technology to benefit Arya is very, very interesting.
Plus, Arya, even though she is, like, now on the outs with all of her friends, Arya does not immediately tell Tanner, I was not in New Hampshire. Like, Arya accepts this. Arya does not dispute this new information.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so Prezra is about to be a manly man and accept blame. He says that he knew about the file. He found it the other night. Maybe he deserved it. Maybe he still does. No, you didn't, Arya assures him. I hate this so much. I hate her having to, you know, make him feel not guilty because he's her OTP soulmate. She says that she's done some terrible things to him. She wants to tell him the truth, but she's not sure he'll be there when she's done. They kiss. This is the worst.
Oh my God. So I really love the part where he simultaneously says that her having that police file was no big deal. Although yes. he did take the shredded paper and stuff it in the composting bin. Just like, I mean, it's no big deal. You know, you just do that to like any, you know, incriminating paper. You know, and then he, when he's like, you know, when he's making her reassure him about what a good man he is, he says he started this relationship by lying to her, which is like such a soft pedal.
Yes.
Everything that he was doing.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So from one terrible man to another, I really don't know which of them is the worst partner in this episode. They're really, really duking it out.
It's a real toss up. Yeah.
It's a race to the bottom, of the swamp. So Caleb has brought Hannah to the courthouse for a surprise wedding. He has surprise rings and surprise Ashley as a guest. And surprise, he told her everything about Hannah's crimes. And surprise, if we get married right away, we can't testify against each other. And there's like this weird to-do about the justice of the peace being available after hours just for them. Everything about this is dreadful. We talked before about like the awkwardness of proposing in front of like other people. I really feel like springing a surprise wedding on the person that you're marrying.
No.
This is not the first time I've seen this on a TV show. I don't know if you ever saw the episode of ER where Luca has a surprise wedding for Abby at what you think is going to be like the hospital's Christmas party. And then it's like, oh, great. So not only do you have a surprise wedding, but it's like also maybe a Christmas party in front of all of your coworkers. Like,
that also happened on Criminal Minds. There's a surprise wedding. Yeah.
Yes. I feel like a surprise wedding is grounds for an immediate surprise divorce, in my opinion.
Surprise! Here's the divorce. Specifically for somebody like Hannah, who like really cares about this stuff.
Yes! You know,
and like really wants to, like, has opinions on all of the aspects of her wedding. And like, you know, is somebody who like spent so much time, you know, planning Ella Montgomery's wedding of all people. Like, she wants to be able to make these choices. This is probably like the one thing in her life that she has to look forward to right now that she feels like, oh, like a fun thing for her to focus on. And Caleb is just like robbing her of that.
Also, Hannah is like a love automaton in this episode. Like, she's like, before she was so mad at Caleb about telling Ashley. And then she's like, I can't believe you're going to use an I love you to get out of this. But it's gonna work. And like now here she is like, oh, we're going to just have a wedding right now that none of my friends are at. Okay, granted, like one of your friends recently betrayed you to AD and another one of your friends was previously fucking Caleb like within the last however many months. So agreed. But I think I say justice for Emily here. Like Emily yes. has been nothing but a good friend to Hannah. Emily was willing to go to Italy to be in the wedding when Hannah was going to marry Jordan. Like, justice for Emily. Really unfair that Emily does not get to come to this wedding after all the time and emotional labor she has done supporting Hannah and her heterosexual choices. Also, I feel like the reason that they are having this after-hours Justice of the Peace wedding situation is totally because Caleb was trying to outwit Mona, who, if it got to the part where if anyone here has reason to object, could probably have, like, stood up and had quite a bit to say.
Or also could have pulled the move of, like, Hannah, we don't want to have to testify against each other. I think that we should get married. You involved me in the game, Hannah. It's the only choice.
Choose or lose, Hannah.
Yes. She takes the little doll, Hannah, on the game board. And she, like, will you marry me? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So, in another weird OT moment, what is it with the partners on this show taking their partners out to the woods? Like, cold, it's dark, there's like a mysterious, you know, murderer out about, you know, like, why in the world is this like now this has become like a pattern of behavior. Allison has led Emily out into the woods, and they're starting, Emily, they're talking about the perfectionist, except for the fact that they hadn't secured Shay Mitchell yet. Like, that's clearly what's going on here, right? Is Emily's like, maybe we should get out of here. It could be an adventure. We could go to a Pacific Northwest place, maybe called, oh, I don't know, Beacon Heights. Like, that's what's happening here. Then Allie kind of weirdly is like, that was a dream. But this is reality. And Allie has set up a picnic at the Kissing Rock because there's nothing like fucking on the cold, hard ground in presumably winter. I don't know if it's winter, but it looks cold.
We'll talk more about the season in a bit, but I have questions.
Okay.
So, first of all, why doesn't anyone bring up the fact that if they move to a place where they don't know anyone, they will have no community support while raising these rape babies? Like, that seems like,
you know, great question. Something
that could be inquired on further. Also, like, as you mentioned, it is the middle of the night in the dark woods, and they have a deadly, omnipotent stalker.
Yep.
Why is this romantic? Why couldn't they, like, they have a house? They couldn't they go have sex in their bed? Or, like, yeah.
Or maybe on the couch?
Like, also, I am concerned about ticks. Just in general, like, they have this blanket spread on all of this grass. I think that the trauma that the Liars have endured should sort of rule out surprise anything. Like, just as a general rule. Also, how long has this fruit just been sitting out here in nature, in the woods? I don't like this at all.
Those are all very good things to be concerned about.
They have, like, all this fruit. They have, like, grapes. They have apples. And I just feel like they could be attracting bears and or ants and or ticks.
And or stalkers.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good.
Oh gosh. We're really going from, like, rough scene to rough scene here. So, oh my goodness. Someone with Spencer's face is at the door of Tobey's cabin. She's here to not fish. Also, it's Alex Drake. And she wants to talk about being an outsider. She wants to drink Tobey's beer. And she wants to fuck Tobey on his couch. The recently widowed and bearded Tobey does not object to this course of action. Although he does have a line where he says, she doesn't sound like the Spencer he knows, regarding being resigned to whatever happens with Tanner's case. So this is framed as the romantic Spoby reunion, but it's really Alex Drake having sex with Tobey while pretending to be Spencer, which is rape. Tobey cannot give informed consent here. So a soft and romantic music strikes up. This is just really not great.
No, it's not okay. And it's this bizarre thing of it's like using a Spencer-shaped body to give Spoby fans this moment of, like, feeling like it's a reunion, but it's, like, actually, like, a pretty horrific assault here. And I just think it's really not a good choice. You know, she also brings up the kiss that they shared, which was the kiss between Alex and Tobey. You know, this sort of confirms that. And I just really am not sure what's going on here.
It's got, like, so this whole thing is really, like, this is the part of the episode where we get into, like, some last night on Earth type of vibes. Like,
sure.
You know, Buffy before the apocalypse. So everyone, you know, everyone is getting it on. This would be more effective, like, the framing of this episode where it's, like, they have 36 hours on this timer. It's going to be ticking down. They've checked back on that timer. And I guess I'm glad that they used the timer rather than, like, doing the 36 hours earlier frame that they were so fond of in earlier seasons. However, the fact that they're doing this last night on Earth routine, we haven't actually seen the timer since there were like 24 hours left on it.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're not really making great use of the ticking clock. But I guess, can I just go through the whole, like, cut back and forth between all of these couple-y scenes, or do we want to switch off?
No, you can do that. I just want to say one more thing about the Toby and Alex thing, which is that I don't know. So, the final, like, stupid twist in the Alex thing is that, like, she apparently fell in love with Toby, which, like, okay. But I don't see how any of the Alex stuff is benefited by Toby and Alex having sex, because what it communicates to me is that Toby can't tell when he's not having sex with Spencer.
Yeah, 100%.
Not great for your OTP friends.
Oh, I strongly agree. And also the way that they're like, oh, but then Alex Drake fell in love with him. That, it, to me, is very similar to, oh, but Prezra fell in love with Arya.
Like, yes.
It doesn't matter how rapey and problematic it is. If you're in love, that's like,
yep,
you know, that is like, you know, that is a defense in a court of law. No.
Yeah. It's really not good. And this is also the second time now that Toby has been raped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, true. Like, first, yikes.
Yeah. First Jenna and Alex. And also it's like a weird, like, we already just had this whole weird, like, Peter Hastings had sex with Mary Drake, thinking that she was, yes, Jessica. That's how Spencer was born. Like, we've already had, like, a ton of, like, weird, messy dynamics from that. And now, like, now here is this. So speaking of informed consent, we switched to another couple who were not able to have that for the whole first four seasons of the show. It's Prezria, still going at it on the couch. And then Emerson are disrobing in the woods and looking so happy that I don't even want to neg them. But again, stalker, blackmail, public exposure, ticks. Also, the scene is like they're taking off their shirts, but they still have their bras on. And then we cut to the candles, as opposed to the Prezria portion, which we're moving back to, where they are both fully topless and she is straddling him.
Yeah.
A place where no one is getting straddled, but somebody is kind of getting screwed. The courtroom, where Caleb and Hannah are getting married whilst everyone else is getting it on. I'm just going to assume that the real Spencer and Mona are having a sex scene during this time period that we don't see.
Yeah.
How nice for them, right? Elsewhere, Alex disrobes werewolf Tobey. She is still raping him, for anyone watching this scene with Tobey feels. And this is actually, like, kind of a fucked up thing to do to your audience, honestly. Like,
yeah,
we can't give informed consent either, because it is not clear in the moment, like, when this was originally airing, what we're watching take place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, super, super strange choice. Back in the forest, Emerson are now snuggling under some kind of, like, rough-hewn blanket or rug that they conveniently bought, as you do. Caleb are exchanging rings. Alex is mounting Tobey, and he is running his fingers over the smallest scar on her shoulder that looks like a cat scratch, like the time, yep, I scraped my wrist tripping over the garbage can. Like, how convenient that they did, like, laparoscopic bullet removal surgery for her. How nice to inject a moment of comedy into your rape scene. Prezra is full naked with just a tartan couch blanket to cover his man butt, and Caleb are still exchanging I do's.
Very, very nice job recapping all of that. That was a lot to get through. Yeah, also, aren't we later going to learn that Alex was the one who shot Spencer? Or do we ever find that out?
I think we learn that Alex was the one who shot her. Yes.
So, is the idea there that she was gonna, that if she had killed Spencer, she was gonna, like, rush in and, like, take her place or something?
I
don't know.
I mean, okay, I guess also, that seems like the move that you would make if you were like an unknown identical twin who was in love with Tobey. But it doesn't seem like a terrifically great plan.
Because like one of the things that is weird is that then Alex asks Ren to shoot her in that very disturbing scene in the finale. And so it's like, Alex, you could have avoided getting shot if you just hadn't shot Spencer. But like, Alex, I guess, is not operating at the fullest mental capacity that one can. I think that that's very strange. I think that I don't understand a lot of what's going on with Alex Drake, both the character herself and the construction of this character. It's just very weird. Very, very weird to me.
100%.
Yeah.
It's also, I hate the scene with Alex and Tobey. I have no affinity for Tobey, but even he deserves better than this. And I feel like one of the things that is interesting, like, he kind of knows that something is off, or he seems to, like, when he says, this doesn't sound like the Spencer I know. Also, there is a moment when Alex/Spencer says to him, like, when I was on the road up here, I just kept thinking about, like, what if I kept driving? And it's like, well, are you saying that as Spencer, or are you saying that as Alex? Because Alex is going to try to just drive off at the end of the very next episode.
Yeah.
So I feel like there are a lot of things here that could be interesting, but it's completely subsumed under the, look, Spoby's back together, but not. Like, the show is trying. I think with this whole Alex Drake thing, the show is trying to like build towards a moment of, oh, we tricked you, but if you were smart enough, you could have figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
And the show, I feel like they tried to do that with the Charlotte reveal too. Like, we tricked you. And I just don't, I don't think that way of interacting with your audience is really any good.
I agree. It's like playing dirty. It's like not playing fair, and it's not satisfying too.
No, it's not at all a satisfying conclusion. Like when you look back on it, like Mona was a super satisfying conclusion. Absolutely. And I think that there were still ways at this time to like end the reveal in a satisfying way, but Alex Drake's not one of them.
I also think that maybe Alex Drake would have felt more satisfying if, like, you know, like, let's say her plan had gone somewhat according to plan. Spencer wasn't killed, but was, like, put into a coma after the gunshot or something. And the Spencer that we were seeing for the rest of the series up until the finale was actually Alex Drake. And it was, like, playing out over a half season.
Or if Spencer hadn't been Spencer since the time jump, like, that too, I feel like, has some potential. So, like, then in the final episodes, you have, like, two Spencers. And which one is, like, I just feel like, yeah, there are many, many ways that this could have gone down in a different and more satisfying way. This, I'm not about it.
Yeah, I agree. So the actual Spencer, who I think has just been having gay sex with Mona, like you said, shows up in a different outfit at, so we're at the Hastings house here, which seems weird.
I was not sure if we were at the Hastings house or the De Laurentiis house. I thought it was the De Laurentiis house because Spencer is the last one to come in. So it's like, was everyone just hanging out at the Hastings? Who knows? We're in a house.
Who knows? We're in a house.
We're in a location that Tanner has not yet devoured.
We're in a void. And they have all agreed to be here when the clock runs out, except for Arya. Hannah asks them all to make a promise that no matter what anyone does, they will all understand. And we just watch as the timer runs out. Like, okay, that's it. Nobody made a choice. Nobody did anything. No last minute anything. Nope. Okay. Spencer, like, suddenly picks up, it's like a vase or something, and she just starts smashing the phone. Hannah asks, why didn't they think of that earlier? And then we quickly learn from Caleb that Toby got a hit on the game's location and texted Prezra to meet him, which is like, what? Okay. Also, like, LOL at the fact that it's like, well, it has to be all of the guys together as, like, the Power Rangers to come in and save the day here. It's so dumb. It's like, the boys are back in action, everybody. I don't think anybody wanted to see, like, the boys ride again, but this is what we're getting here at the end of the episode.
Yeah. I think it's so funny. They're in a void. We don't really know the location. I wasn't sure what Spencer used to smash the phone. I was like, a decorative rock? I have no idea. So, like, yeah. They're in a void. Like, none of the props are very specific. Like,
yeah.
You know, who knows what's going on with the woods? Also, there's this whole, like, Last Night on Earth vibe. I really think it's crazy that Caleb, who, like, just got married to Hannah, is like, oh, well, the boy's got a lead. Better go. Like,
yes.
But, like, the other liars are acting like when the timer runs out, like, who knows what's going to happen? The cops are going to burst in. You know, the house is going to blow up. Like, you know, they're definitely, like, that's the space that they're in. And Caleb's just like, well, bye.
See y'all later.
I'll be see you in jail.
Yeah.
Spencer and Hannah. But, yeah. Also, we were talking, I don't even remember if we were talking on the podcast or before we started recording, but we were talking about how the idea of choose or lose would be more compelling if they actually did have to choose or lose, but the liars don't make a choice. Like, that's the whole point. Like, they don't make a choice, the time runs out, and also nothing happens. It's extremely anticlimactic. The time just runs out, and then there's no more time.
And they're just like, okay. I also think it could have been interesting if, you know, choose or lose. I think it could have been interesting if it was one of those things where, like, they discovered that it meant something different than they thought it meant.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know what it would be. Like, oh, you have to choose. You don't just have to confess to Archer's murder. You each have to choose a crime to confess to. Or, you know, you have to choose somebody else to take the fall other than one of you or something like that.
Or choose Arya or you all go to jail. Like, if that,
sure.
If that were explicit here, I think that could be really interesting.
Or choose between your OTP and the friends.
My goodness. Please make them make that choice. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I feel like any of those things would have been quite a bit more compelling. And I actually think, like, with the timer running down like this and then nothing happening, like, they even could have fixed that instead of the tech telling Tanner there's blood on the glass in that earlier meaningless scene. Mm-hmm. You could have just had it, like, coming back on a Rosewood computer, like, the blood is a match, or, you know,
they're sure.
Like, that would have been fine, so that we know that, like, something is happening on the police side at the moment that the timer runs out, but we get nothing. It's just boom. There was time. Now there's not time. Everything is essentially the same.
Yeah, time goes by so slowly.
And time do so much. All right. Also, I really think it's very funny that when they make this pact, like, no one's gonna get mad. Spencer agrees to it. Emily swears. Hannah nods. And Allison, who I guess is only a vessel for the rape babies, doesn't get a vote. Like, she does. She doesn't get to voice anything in that moment.
Yeah.
Quite something. Also, I think it's messed up. I guess it was Toby who texted Prezra, but, like, I don't think Prezra should get to be involved now that Arya is a betrayer. Like, the liar should really, like, work to cut his
Yeah, I totally agree, especially considering that, like, he was the reason for the betrayal.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So speaking of Arya, meanwhile, she is pacing Prezra's place and then calling AD for a chat. She has figured out a way out. She is going to turn herself in to spare her friends. AD is like, nope, too late, game over, you've won your freedom. Your friends, though, they are in trouble. Arya is upset, but AD makes the burner phone explode and catch on fire. Arya grabs her own phone from the evidence box, and does not take any steps to extinguish the burner foam that she dropped on the floor completely ablaze. This is not good fire safety protocol.
It is not. I do love the phone bursting into flames. Great little, great little moment. And I mean, Dark Night of the Soul, Arya, amazing line. But I also just, I think that this is very interesting that it's like, this feels like it's sort of that classic A version of like, you're getting a version of what you wanted, but it's actually so much worse than you imagined.
I totally agree. And I think that, like, when you talk about choose or lose, like, Arya is the only person who has made an active choice in this part of the season. Like, she chose to work with AD and to hopefully get herself out of this. And now, like, she is going to have to live with the consequences of that choice. The consequences may be that she goes free and all the other liars wind up in jail. Why does she tell AD? Why does she call AD to say, I think I found a way out of this? Because she doesn't really want that way out.
No.
Like, no, she's calling AD knowing that they're going to talk her out of it.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. I also think, though, that AD is the only person that Arya is allowed to talk to anymore.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a, just kind of a brief moment here where Prezra and Caleb are, you know, still trying to track down this mysterious signal. Again, as you said, Prezra should not be allowed to be part of this anymore. And they discover that they are near Mona's apartment.
Yes, Caleb has a big husband hard on because he's like, oh, Mona lives near here. So he's like real excited that Mona is maybe up to no good.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's like, Prezra, can we just like pull over? Can you just like jerk me off real quick? Like, this is really getting me going. Hannah and I didn't get to consummate the marriage. Like, I need this from you right now, buddy.
Arya is driving in her car and leaving a message for Spencer about an unspecified plan that she has to make things right. She makes a turn and we hear a loud thud coming from her trunk. Something is up with the car. She pulls over to check it out. And upon opening her trunk, it is a 9-fingered corpse riding around with her. She screams, flashing lights pull up behind her, and she closes the trunk so fast that it is hilarious. Arya is now going to have to deal with the cops with this body in her trunk. And I would just like to point out, like, you know, I am very interested in the economy of Rosewood.
Sure.
Tonight, I am also interested in the microclimates of Rosewood and this unknown season or time of year that it is when it is warm enough that Emerson feel like having sex outside in the picnic grass is a pleasant idea. Like, it is warm enough that you would want to take your clothing off outside.
Sure.
With
sure.
Nothing but like the burlap blanket that they brought with them to put over themselves, but cold enough that the body that has been buried underground for an unknown number of weeks and is now just exposed in Arya's trunk is not going to stink to high heaven to the point that the police are going to want to investigate it. How fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree. I would agree. It's very interesting. I do love this though. It's great. I love Arya, you know, dropping her keys in the trunk. I love everything about this. Arya being in possession of a dead body when she's like, I want to be out. I want to be done with all of this. Well, yeah, you got a dead body on your hands, Arya. What are you going to do with that?
And, like, what are you going to do with that when it's just you? Like, what are you going to do when you don't have, like, a whole squad of liars surrounding you to help you deal with it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. She's all alone, ready to, not ready or not ready to deal with this body. So Caleb and Prezra are now in the hallway that is just the hallway to Prezra's old apartment that we're pretending is actually Mona's apartment. They have followed the tracker inside. There's like, they're really trying to like make this seem very cool and technical because we have like the, you know, whatever it is, the footage where you can see inside, like infrared footage.
My note is that Caleb's iPad is now a thermal camera.
Yes. Yes. You can see like the body of Mona moving around inside. We cut to inside Mona's apartment, where we see Mona in a black t-shirt, hunching down beside the game board. A big jail cell pops up on the game board, and Mona watches with rapt attention and slips on a pair of glasses, which I like a pair of glasses being like a sign, like all is not right.
110%. I do love this. I feel like it's so funny because, like, you know, we're going to have this whole thing in the next episode of like, oh no, is Mona AD? But it's hilarious because all they're doing here is like Mona is being Mona. Like Mona yeah. is inside her apartment. And yeah. honestly, she did the liars a solid by stealing the board game.
That's what I think. Game. So, yeah. I know it's being framed as like, oh, this is, you know, maybe she created this, but I'm like, no, Mona did them a favor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
100,000%. Also, this episode, like, so we're talking about like kind of the ticking clock element and the kind of mm-hmm. last night on Earth element. This is also an episode where it's almost a relief. I think it's almost one of the things that works well about this episode. Is this episode does not spend any time speculating about who AD is. Like, at this time, like, this is a moment where it almost doesn't even matter anymore. We're not hearing Mary Drake. We're not hearing Jenna. We're not hearing Lucas. We're not hearing any of their theories this week. It's just all like, well, this is counting down 36 hours and then it's all over.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. This episode feels a little bit more present in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we just don't have to waste time. We don't have to yeah. like waste time on whatever the theory of the week is that we know is not actually going to be a real theory.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that is the end of the episode. What are your final thoughts?
I mean, what a time. Also, just like talking about like Emerson and the way that like their intimacy is framed versus like the other couples who are going at it at this
yes.
time.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I'm glad that we have a moment where we can be like, yes, Emerson had sex in this episode. Like if yes. people want to fight about, you know, if people want to fight about, did you miss me? You know, miss me times 1,000. Like if they want to argue that point, like here, it seems like it's definitely like within the framing. Very clear. However, it's the framing that makes it clear, not what we actually see. Whereas we see like Arya straddling Prezra, whereas we see like, you know, Alex straddling Toby, like we don't really know exactly what's going on. Like they're under a blanket, they're yeah. like smiling at each other,
yeah.
they're brushing their ankles together, and then we're going to candles, which I you know, I'm glad for what we got, but I do feel like there's still a pretty significant disparity between how the queer relationship is treated.
I agree. And there's a laziness to it too. And it's also just so sort of funny in the sense of like Emily essentially outlining the perfectionists that won't happen for the two of them, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like when you talk about like the laziness of this episode, there are a lot of ways in which it is like, a very lazy bit of writing. Like we don't get to hear like vows that Hannah and Caleb are saying
no,
to each other.
No.
We just see them like say, I do. I think at one point like the subtitles is like, you know, indecipherable. Like,
yes, well, indecipherable yeah. vows or something. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna like, you're gonna get a Caleb wedding, but we're not going to give you like any kind of like real emotional connection between them. Like you just see them, like Hannah is like beaming at him and you're just supposed mm-hmm. to be like, oh well, all is great.
Yeah, yeah. It's, and like we don't see, you know, we don't get to see like Ashley's initial reaction to being told all this information.
Yeah.
Like there's just a lot that we're kind of shuffling through because next week is the second to last episode of the series.
Yep, almost yeah. there.
So yeah,
lovely.
Farewell, my lovely. Yeah. Well, do we have anything more that we want to say about Choose or Lose?
Nothing. I have nothing else that I choose to say about this episode.
We choose to lose this episode. Yeah. Well, if you have any thoughts about this episode, if you like plot improvements, things that you would have done to spice this up a little bit, you can, of course, send us an email, everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And you can, of course, send in a rating and review on iTunes. I can't believe that we are almost at the end of the series. Can you?
No, it seems impossible. Like when we first started talking about this podcast, I remember thinking about like, well, if we agree to do this, it's going to be like years before we're done. And here it is, years later.
Here it is, years. And we're almost done. It's really, really wild. But what a ride it's been.
Truly.
Yes. All right. Well, until next time.
Take care.